Welcome to today's episode of The Power of Reinvention. Here we talk with my guests about the dreams, the visions, and the passions that individuals have every day and dare to explore them. Whether it's business or personal, you're entitled to live the life that you want, and no matter what the circumstances, you have the power to create success, fulfill your dreams, and live with passion. That's what I'm talking about. So dare greatly and happy reinventing, folks. Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Power of Reinvention. I'm thrilled to have my guest, Seth Matlins, on the show today. Hi, Seth.
Hello, Kathy.
Thank you for being here. I love these conversations. You know, it's so special for me to be able to engage in a dialogue with my fellow adults to talk about, I think we're adults, but today we'll pretend we are. But to talk about so many of the incarnations of our lives, past, present, future, the impact of reinvention in all parts of our lives. And as many of you know, this podcast was born out of the book that I launched at the very beginning, ironically, the beginning of the pandemic. The book is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For? And thanks to Quincy Jones, who wrote my foreword. It's really quite an extraordinary book that features a lot of wonderful anecdotes and stories and power tools to help people kind of figure out how to live their best life. And having a podcast as an extension of this is really unique because I get to have these ongoing conversations that are timely and relevant and address what we're all dealing with. And of course, after the last couple of years, both on a personal and business level, I think it's definitely impacted all of us. So bringing Seth into this conversation, having just come off the Forbes CMO Summit, we're going to chat a little bit about that. But before we delve in, I'm just going to give a little background for those who don't know Seth Matlins. He's the currently the managing director of the Forbes CMO Network. In this role, he's charged with overseeing and building the editorial content, programming strategy, development for one of the most influential communities of marketers globally, which includes the annual Forbes CMO Summit, the world's most influential CMOs list, the entrepreneurial CMOs list, and signature events at Cannes Lions Festival of Creativity and a growing portfolio of editorial initiatives. Prior to Forbes, Seth was the EVP of Cultural Strategy and Insights at Endeavor, which is a full-service cultural marketing agency, 160/90, I believe it was that piece of what was, is that correct? 160/90, where he founded and oversaw the agency's strategic planning, cultural insights, purpose-driven marketing, and entertainment marketing practices. He also sat on Endeavor's DEI Board of Advisors. Prior to that, he was the global CMO of Live Nation. Founder of That Was Then Enterprises, a brand strategy and development consultancy helping businesses reframe the purpose, profit, narrative, where he conceived and led the introduction of federal legislation, the Truth in Advertising Act, introduced into Congress in 2014 and again in 2016, with bipartisan support as an integrated part of a movement working to protect women and children from the health consequences perpetuated by photoshopped ads and images. This work actually led directly to his award-winning CVS Beauty Mark campaign while at Endeavor. And we have accolades from our friend here. What is his name? Hi, Oscar. Thanks for joining us and chiming in on that. Well done, Seth, right?
Yes, thank you. Before Live Nation, Oscar,
Seth started the marketing practice for legendary Hollywood agency CAA. Prior to CAA, he was president of Rock the Vote. And he is also the co-author of the Scratch and Sniff book of Weed, now in its seventh printing. And I am a proud owner of that book. I remember when it first came out. It's funny. It's like actually sitting in our bedroom on my husband's like bookcase. And it's just one of those things where it's like you just don't want to put it away because every time you look at the cover, it makes you smile. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're still, I wrote it with my significant other, and we're still incredibly proud of what we were able to put together. Yeah, 6 years later.
So, wow, I just shared some pretty amazing things about your career, your background, what you're doing, what you've been doing. What I'm going to do, though, is take you way back, Seth. I want to ask you who little Seth was. What was it when you were young? Let's call it 5, 12, 15. What did you dream that you'd be doing one day when you grow up?
You know, I'm not much for dreams, both literally. I never, ever remember them. And I don't actually recall that many one day I wills. I do recall that my, my first kind of professional aspiration, I kid you not, I grew up in Manhattan. And my first professional aspiration was I wanted to own the country's largest chain of flower stores. I've always loved flowers. Don't know anything about them, but I've always loved the architecture of flowers, and that was an early memory. I was about 9, I think, when, and many of your listeners may not recall the pet rock.
I do,
but in mid to late 70s, an ad exec took a rock, put two googly eyes on it, put it in a box, put air holes in the box, put a story in the box with the air holes and the rock on the care and feeding of your pet rock. And this thing sold 5 million rocks.
Amazing.
In, I think, like without, 6 weeks.
Without social media.
Yes. Social media was but a figment of somebody's imagination at that point. Even at 9, I'm being quite literal. I remember thinking, my God, that's freaking brilliant, right? Like, I just got the high-low conceit. I got the anthropomorphism. I got the notion of making something out of nothing. And I was quite smitten. And I have continued to try and figure out what my own version of the pet rock would be all these many years later. But little Seth was just trying to get through the day.
I love that you bring up the pet rock. You know, I think there's one product that I found in my journey of business and marketing, and like you, always curious, like, what is that one thing? And being an entrepreneur, having my own business for 35 years, kind of had the latitude to engage with, get involved with, represent, work with. And I was actually having a breakfast meeting one day with someone, and I asked him a question. He goes, oh, let me show you something on my phone. And he proceeded to pull out a pair of very thin glasses from the back of his phone, which I'm holding up for Seth right now. And for those who don't know, I'm going to give them a shameless plug right now. They became a client. They're not at the moment, but they were for quite some time. They're called Thin Optics, and they're paper thin, like credit card thin, actually. And they sit on the back of your phone. So every time you have your phone in your hand, which we all do all the time, if you're just looking for readers and you need to read a menu or read what's on your phone or something in your immediate midst, you're in the kitchen and you got to look at a label, your phone's always with you. Your glasses may not be. You may have a pair in every room if you're using reading glasses. But it was one of those things when he pulled it out and I looked at him and I go, wait, what is that? And within 24 hours, I was on the phone calling the CEO of the company saying, brilliant. What are you doing? How are you marketing those? I have 9 million ideas for you. Let's talk. And they became a client. So I have such an appreciation for that, you know, that little aha moment when you see something and you just know, like, clever, just clever.
I have always been fascinated by that aha moment, not so much my own, because it happens too infrequently, but in particular for creators, for artists, their aha moment, the moment where whatever is happening inside their brains and hearts and beings becomes the expression of an idea. And I think it's, you know, trite to say it, but would that we could bottle it.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. And I think, look, we both live in a world in what we do where the curiosity, the creativity, the intersection of curiosity, creativity, and business are our lifeblood. You know, it's what I know. I jump out of bed every morning, like excited about what I'm doing with my clients and what we're going to discover or create or build on. And, you know, you've sat in that same seat for so many years. What do you think's really interesting right now? I mean, you've just come off the Forbes CMO Summit where you had some of the greatest marketers and minds in the room with you, passionate, I think, about what they do. What do you feel is kind of, you know, the new renaissance coming out of the last 2.5 years of the craziness of our world?
Well, I'd probably be fibbing if I suggested I had any clue, but I think you used really the right word, which is what's a renaissance. I mean, times of crisis and trouble and oftentimes disease, literally and figuratively, have often, you know, throughout history spurred great art movements, great renaissance of thinking and expression. And I don't know what they'll be particularly, but I think that what we're seeing, and this is something that we talked a little bit about in the context of marketing in Miami at the Forbes Summit, but I think it goes beyond that, is how we're going to put pieces back together. And, you know, to the theme of this conversation and of your book, how are we going to reinvent? Again, it's trite and cliche to say the way we live, but I think that it's also true. But not just the way we live, but how we live, how we combine different elements to make something new. And I don't, by the way, put a great deal of value on newness, but to make something better,
relevant,
to make something better
relevant
for us
to where we are today, right?
Well, that's. I think relevance is, you know, is kind of a precondition of better.
Yeah.
But yes. And you know, recognizing, of course, that better is a subjective judgment and better to me may not be to you. I think that it is a moment of extraordinary intersectionality, metaphorically and literally, that identity, human identity is and its expression are literally morphing and being given the permission to show up in ways that have never been given before. And that makes some people very uncomfortable, politically and otherwise. But it makes me very hopeful and very excited to see how the brilliant and the curious and the creative, to use your words again, amongst us start to put those pieces together, how they start to play and what
starts
to stick.
And I love that because I feel like it's so ironic. You know, my book came out at the beginning of the pandemic, pub date being when it was. You know, was not intentional. Clearly, I'd been working on this for years and interviewed hundreds of people and had a plan. And I had a launch party planned in LA March 27th and one in New York April 15th and on. And clearly, those things didn't happen. The great irony in all of that is that this book sort of became the guidebook for now and will continue to be because it is so about, you know, what I talk about in here and every day with my guests is the need to pause and reflect and sit back and think about your life and every piece of it. And are you truly living your best life, whatever that means? And it's, you know, for every one of us, we are the center of our own life and our own world. Many of us don't understand that we're entitled to live the life that we want. And we kind of wake up at a certain age and go, wow, look at what I'm doing. Why am I doing this? And I should be doing this and I could be doing that. And we look at social media and we see what everybody else is doing. And, you know, it makes you question. It creates a lot of angst for a lot of people, but there is no reason why you can't sort of sit back and kind of go, okay, let's break this down. Let's figure this out. And I think watching businesses do that right now is super exciting. And watching those in those roles that have the ability to affect that outcome is really exciting. Exciting for them. It's exciting to watch. And it's exciting for those of our friends who are in those roles that have a chance to raise their hand and say, I'm going to do this right. I'm going to do it with purpose. I'm going to do it with inclusivity. I'm going to do it with an intention to make this company do well on all levels. And that's an exciting proposition, I think, for our marketing folks out there.
Yeah, I think it absolutely should be. And I think it is for many. I think it should be for stake and shareholders as well. You know, we're at a moment, and you know, you read it in my bio, which is I don't like the word purpose much. Personally, I think it's lost its meaning, which is rather perverse in its own way. And I think it's become a distraction. And you know, yet within that, I talked and my bio reflected on trying to rewrite the purpose profit narrative, because I think there still is a perspective that despite 40 years of the truism that you do well by doing good, that we're like, oh, should we focus on purpose or should we focus on profit? I'm quite focused on profit. And we just live in a wonderful time. And I think, you know, going back to your first question to me, it's only become more so because of, and over the last 3 years, we're one of the fastest, I don't want to say fastest, that's probably inaccurate, but one of the best ways to sometimes, if not oftentimes, serve as a strategic and financial engine of profit is to do right by the world and the people in it. And that's a beautiful confluence of events. But I do still subscribe to the Milton Friedman you know, perspective that the business of business is business. It's just what drives business today happens to be the expression of humanity, the expression of shared values, doing good, not just no that. Evil.
Wow. That's
been in my drafts folder for like out, 5 months.
Man, it's time.
I'm like, so determined to spend Thanksgiving
as for those who won't know until they hear this, but this is the eve of Thanksgiving. So I think that's the perfect time to sort of revisit it. And I think it's important. I think you're right. Look, business is business. You know, you run a company, there's a bottom line. You know, if you take your eye off it for a moment, that's not a good thing, especially in this economy, in this day and age. But I feel like we're all operating at a different frequency. And for that, I'm really grateful. I feel like many of the people in our midst are playing at a different level now, emotionally, psychically, responsibly. You know, that is a really special thing. And I'm not saying everybody, but I do feel like we're all playing at a different frequency at the moment.
I think more and more people are. And I think that if there's a moment to consider, it's the people who would be but feel like they can't, and you know, we deal with and many of us are, you know, fear and the absence of perceived safety keep a lot of good people from doing good and or different things, and it's a very real circumstance of the last few years. And I don't think that, you know, we have culturally begun to reckon with the PTSD that we have en masse. Despite that, I'm very optimistic,
right?
Or some moderately optimistic, modestly. If I keep going, I'll be like wild.
You mentioned fear, and I kind of want to dig into that in a moment, as it pertains to you and just sort of the trajectory, all these, you know, different career paths that you were on at certain points. You pivoted, you made a move, you got into new companies and new jobs. Was there a catalyst moment? Was there fear involved? And, you know, we have an audience that, you know, I think we're all constantly questioning, should I, shouldn't I? Is this the right move for me? What's the risk and the reward? Were there moments where you had to kind of lean into that and figure out how to move through that? And, you know, fear is a very subjective experience for everybody. I see, you know, change to me is an adventure. The word fear does not exist in my vocabulary at all. And, you know, maybe I'm afraid of a, a fire, an earthquake, something like that, that physically will affect me. But the emotional state of fear because of circumstances or things that are happening around me, you know, not so much. So what is your sort of interpretation of the change fear factor and what you had to experience at certain junctures in your journey?
I mean, fear, I do think, sorry, let me see if I can close out of this because
I do hear it. Hear it's all good. We live on our computers. Those are real.
Fear is rarely a productive feeling, but it can be a productive motivator. And yeah, fear has absolutely played a role in my life. But I think, you know, for good and ill, if I focus on it for the sake of this conversation as for good, it's forced me to confront kind of the challenges of living my best life and force me to, in moments in time, define and redefine what I mean by best life and on whose behalf sometimes I'm living it, because a lot of my fear, at least certainly within a professional context, has been driven by being the father of my children and what I want to do for and leave to them. But, you know, I will share a moment in my career. I will leave the employer vague. But there was a moment in my career where I'd been somewhere for some time, great company. So this is no shade on them at all. I was making a tremendous amount of money, but I was not happy. And I felt that I was teaching my kids to take money and forsake happiness. And I wanted to teach them that they could have both if they chose both. Not that money's important, but not that money's important by definition. Anyway, I happen to be a fan of it. And the fear of teaching my kids, of modeling the wrong behaviors, of modeling the wrong priorities, was a real motivator. And it caused me to make a big shift. I think that fear can be really productive. And I think fear is what, has prolonged the species, right? Fear is what helps us survive threat or right. Keep us away from threat anyway. And we're still all quite primitive, you know, no matter how sophisticated we may be, or more often think we are. The architecture of the human brain is unchanged over 10,000 years, more or less. And we're still driven by either surviving or thriving. Everything else is means to an end. And I think I go back and forth, not quite like a pendulum, but over the course of my career, over any given day sometimes, between, you know, figuring out if I'm it's about survival or thrival of the fittest. Fear has certainly played its role in my life and does still. I'm terrified for the future about those things I cannot control on my children's behalf.
That's a tough one because that's a whole messy situation, the world, you know, on a number of levels at the moment. Yep. So that's very valid for our kids to be, you know, what is the world that they will be growing up in, you know, on a number of levels. Yeah.
Or growing old in. I'm less concerned about the one they're growing up in. It makes quite positive about the one they're growing up in, at least in our community here in Los Angeles. But the one they're going to grow old in, if they get to grow old, that's what worries me.
It's interesting. Well, you know, what do we do? What do we do? How do we change? How do we change it? I think conversation is everything, and sort of finding a way to be honest about, you know, what we can affect.
I think that that's absolutely right. And I think I've had this conversation with one of my kids recently who's going through some things. And I said to them, you know, the brain is a, your brain is a terrible place to spend time. And just even if you, because that is true for all of us, right? I don't know who said it 100 years ago, but you know, if you ever spoke to somebody else the way you spoke to yourself inside your brain, you'd have no friends. What I said to this one of my kids is, you know, even if you just speak the fear out, the anxiety, the worry, the what-ifing out loud to yourself with the door closed, it's so much healthier than keeping it inside. You know, there's forgive me for not knowing who said this originally, but you know, there's an old saying, the only thing harder than speaking your truth is not. And that's what, you know, where we are. And I think you're right. It's about conversation. And, you know, shit, if I sound so pessimistic, and I don't mean to, but I do have, I think, a reasonable concern that unless things change, they will not get better at a certain point. They will decline, and at least, you know, we'll adapt, we'll survive as a species.
But we are at such an inflection point right now where, you know, I mean, all of the tough stuff that we're dealing with is forcing us to all lean in like we never have. And, you know, having an opinion and being engaged and, you know, so much of that. So without getting political, I want to ask you a question. You talk about, you know, your true thoughts, and do you feel that you're living your true north? I mean, beyond your thoughts, are you living the life? Are there, you know, bucket list items that you're looking at now going, okay, I'm in a certain stage in my life. There are all these things I wish I was doing. I want to be doing. Are you there? Are you, you know, what's aspirational for you at this juncture, both personally, professionally?
I'm pretty, look, I think there's a big difference between happiness and fulfillment. And I seek fulfillment, recognizing that, you know, A, the downside is that which, you know, provides some context for the upside. B, it's, you know, inevitable. I'm pretty fulfilled. I'm pretty, I don't want to say I'm content, because that would suggest a status quo, or at least a status. But yeah, I feel pretty good about what I'm doing and what's in front of us. And I'm excited about my ability, the opportunity that has unfolded for me to make a difference, or at least to try to make a difference. You know, the actually making is the consequence of the trying, in some things and with some people that matter to me. And you know, I do think a bit about legacy these days, and I'm working on a couple of, you know, legacy things if they go well.
The next Pat
and,
Rock.
And it's
come on, way, I'm dying to know. That remains. I want to be a part of that.
Inspiration. I do all have one kicking around, but it's been kicking around for 12 years. But yeah, I feel pretty good about where things are and where That's they're going. Great. And, you know,
it's a wonderful place to be and to operate from. It frees you. You know, I think there's so much energy that many of us use wasted on, you know, the what ifs and the coulds and the shoulds, that, you know, so much speaks to just you know, get focused, lean into something that really is important and meaningful for you and make it happen. And it may take 5 minutes, it may take 10 years, but every step in that direction is going to get you closer to that true north moment or feeling or place in your world, in your life, right?
Yeah, I don't probably use the language of or even have anything I'd point to of true north besides, you know, I guess what I've been trying to do for a long time, and I'm certainly trying to do it now, back to the notion of legacy, is to use my platform and privilege to help create impact at scale. And I've long tried to be of service to underrepresented communities and those who, you know, just fundamentally were born with less than I was given. And I've always been acutely aware of that. And I think, you know, one of the great things about being at Forbes today is it's a business that is focused on creating impact at scale. It's a platform that can do that. And their willingness, you know, not shockingly for a company that has celebrated entrepreneurial capitalism for 105 years, their willingness to think entrepreneurially, to act entrepreneurially, has made the last 9 months since I've been there quite a bit.
That's fantastic. So I have a fun question for you, and it's fun for me because I love to hear the answers. If you were able, you've met some pretty amazing people in your journey and all that you've been doing and the people that have come across your life. And, I'm sure some have impacted you in different ways. If you could have a dinner party and have three or four people in your life, maybe you've never met them and they're aspirational, they could be dead, they could be alive. Who would you want to have sitting at that dinner table, have a glass of wine and maybe break bread with and have an interesting conversation?
Well, I'm going to be thinking about this long after we're done recording because I'm part of why that article hasn't been written is I'm a perpetual editor. I will share like who leaps to mind, right? Gandhi, King, Mother Teresa leapt to mind as I keep talking. Steve Jobs, who I was on my way to a meeting with Steve Jobs and was asked not to go by Steve Jobs because he said, I was at CAA at the time. He said, "Yeah, the Hollywood guys, they talk too much."
Oh,
I was like,
God,
"I won't say a thing.
Don't disinvite me. I want to be there."
I would have loved to have had that opportunity. I think it's hard for me in this moment to feel good about necessarily the names, but the types of people, obviously, great thinkers, doers, and creators, people that and I apologize. I think it's like the third time I've said something I've said is trite. So forgive me for like a overabundance of triteness.
Are you giving me
cliche.
An idea for the topic now?
But it's like, people who are, I value people who make me look at the world differently. I would want to have a dinner party with them. Bob Dylan too. So he can play the soundtrack.
I love that. It's fun. You think about the people that impact your world and your life and your vision and perspective. And, I'm sure we could invite some pretty interesting people to that dinner table. But I think, look, we leave our mark as well in different ways on those who follow that come up behind us. That whether it's our kids, whether it's the people on the teams and the companies that we do business with every day. And we have the opportunity to just, as you said, leave the world a better place. And, I think we're in positions and, in roles that allow us to be able to have some effect there, which I think is really pretty incredible. And I just,
it's
appreciate your perspective in this and being able to share this conversation with my audience that are looking for, a dose of inspiration and motivation and, just a way forward into something that might be other than what they are currently doing or how they are living.
I've realized who I'd like to have dinner with.
Oh,
Yoda.
Oh, yes.
As you're saying this, right? I was reminded as you were saying of a quote that I sometimes wrestle with myself, but that great Yoda-ism, there is no try, just do. Easier said than done, Yoda. Good to hold it in heart and mind.
A drop mic moment. On that note, with Seth and Yoda in mind, I bid you adieu. Seth, that was amazing. Thank you for this conversation, for your time, your insights. Continue doing the incredible stuff that you're doing, surrounding yourself with people who in these conversations you're having will affect change on so many different levels, the impact on business and pop culture and so much in those roles and those rooms is more than a lot of us realize every day. And so, you know, they're lucky to have you in that room being a part of that and leading those conversations and steering a lot of, you know, where those voices are being heard. So I thank you for that. And I can't wait to see what's to come and continue to have great conversations with you. And thank you for being on my show today.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks. I appreciate it. It was fun.
Thanks for listening to The Power of Reinvention. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Wouldn't mind a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to visit thereinventionexchange.com to share your reinvention stories, suggest a guest, join the newsletter mailing list, get access to my book, which is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, and discover fantastic bonus content with my blogs, and listen in to the Reinvention Virtual Chat series. Don't forget to join me next week for another episode. Please share with a friend, and thank you for listening. Happy reinventing.